This is the Six Man Show, an Orlando Magic podcast, with your hosts, Luke Sylvia and Jonathan Osborne, covering all things Magic basketball. By fans, for fans. Go Magic! What's going on, Orlando Magic fans? You guys are back with the Six Man Show. It is July 22nd, 2021. As always, you know I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Sylvia. Luke is in new light. Luke, what's up, man? How are you?
I do have the light equipment upgrade, so that's pretty exciting. I also was in Disney this past weekend. Jonathan was a little
listeners
salty.
Are aware.
I didn't
the listeners are aware.
Slide him an invite to Disney, which
people
you guys
forget.
Heard on the last episode. Right.
You have anything to say for yourself, or you want to?
No, I really don't. Jonathan was moving, and I have no regrets. So there's that.
No regrets.
But yeah. So I'm excited. I'm excited for our guest today, Jonathan, and excited to get into some draft content about a week out from the draft.
Well, I'm very glad that you had a great time in Disney. We'll talk more about the no invite later on. But ladies and gentlemen, we do have a very exciting episode, a special guest for you guys today. Eric Fawcett, you guys might remember, he covers the draft, was on with us last year around this time, so we're really excited to bring him back. For those of you who don't know, Eric covers Florida Gator basketball for GatorCountry.com, co-hosts the Florida Basketball Hour podcast. He covers the NBA draft for NBA Canada, Australia, India, and Japan. Eric, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, it's good to be back. I mean, last year was super fun. At least, I thought it was. You're having me back, so hopefully you feel the same way. But yeah, definitely was able to get a few Magic fan followers from that I still talk to this day. So I know you've got some really passionate listeners. It's great to see how much your guys' show has grown in the last year. And it's super fun to talk about this year's draft, especially after we just see a team like Milwaukee win an NBA championship by drafting really well outside of, the one or two or third overall pick. That's got to be really exciting for the Magic, who've got some good picks in this draft. So yeah, it's great to be talking.
Can we talk about that for a moment? Like last night, first of all, I said Bucks in seven. There was some Suns in five talk on the podcast between Luke and Kevin. I did waver from that pick, so I don't want to be like, oh, I knew it all along type of deal. But man, just what a moment last night as the clock is, ticking down, Giannis and PJ Tucker hugging. After the confetti's falling, Giannis takes a moment to himself, sits back on the baseline there. Obviously emotional. Just that was just really awesome to see. Eric, how did you see that that series playing out? Did it go the way that you thought?
Oh man, I'd love to lie to you, Jonathan, but no, I was a Suns in seven guy before this series. I wish I could backtrack and say that I was on the Milwaukee train, but I just thought that the way that Milwaukee played offense, the Phoenix played offense, I thought that they were just going to really pick apart the defense of Milwaukee, particularly their drop coverage, the way that the Suns love to use that Spain pick and roll, which has of course become so popular and talked about through this playoffs. I thought that they were just going to get Brooke Lopez running all around the court. I thought they were going to get open three after open three, and that wasn't the case. And of course Giannis was so head and shoulders above anyone as the best player on the floor, and that's really tough to overcome in basketball. So I should have seen that one coming, but I didn't. I thought Phoenix was going to win in seven.
Luke, Giannis dropping the 50 burger last night. Thoughts?
I mean, I said it last night on Twitter. I've been very disrespectful to Giannis. I have been so disrespectful to Giannis, really in the last year or two. Bud, lost a little bit of my respect getting just absolutely trounced, for lack of a better term, by Miami last year in postseason. I think he just got severely outcoached last season and really thought that Monty Williams was going to be able to do that. Unfortunately, I think Monty really didn't adjust like I thought he would. It seems like they kind of went up 2-0 and Monty just kind of didn't really adjust as much as I would have hoped. I said it last night on Twitter, hats off to Giannis. He had the 50 piece in a title game, and then also went to Chick-fil-A today. Saw this on the NBA TikTok, went to Chick-fil-A today and ordered a 50 piece from Chick-fil-A. So good for Giannis. He's a great dude. Especially off the court, just, everybody just has great things to say about him. I think that he gained a lot of people's respect last night, including mine. So I think that was, you know, obviously huge for his legacy. That was kind of the next thing that Kobe Bryant had challenged him with a couple years ago was, you know, after he said win MVP, now win the championship. Paul Gasol had a really good, really cool tweet last night just saying he did it with a heart on Twitter. And I thought that was a really cool moment to see. So, yeah, hats off to Giannis again. And I take back everything I ever said. Giannis can be the number one option on a championship team.
Massive W's all around. I was very disrespectful to Chris Middleton. I will say that about 2 months ago while, you know, they're in the first round. I tweeted that the Bucks are not going to win a championship with Chris Middleton being their legitimate number two and without a closer. And he was both of those things throughout the entire, you know, playoff run. He was a legitimate number two. He was their closer, you know, multiple times in this playoff run. And I mean, got to give him credit where credit is due. They won the championship. There might be not an asterisk, but I think everyone would agree that this was a very weird season and a very weird playoff run. I'm not trying to discredit the Bucks, so we won't get too into that.
You're trying to say it's a Mickey Mouse ring?
I'm not saying it's a Mickey Mouse ring. I'm not saying that. I'm not trying to, you know, delegitimize anything that either team has done in the last couple of years here when, you know, winning the championship. But the coolest thing to me, just to, like, to see Giannis, you know, everything that he's gone through in his life, growing up in Greece, coming to the U.S. as just a honestly a very skinny kid, and the growth that he's made not only physically but as a basketball player, and just to see the, like, elation on his face last night was incredible. The coolest story to me was his first season in the league, sending all of his money back to Greece, did this on game day, didn't have enough money for the cab fare, and then starts running to the Bucks arena. Found a, you know, a couple pulled over. He got in the back of their Honda Fit, if you can picture that, and drove him to the arena. So super happy.
When's
for
the
Bucks
documentary
fans.
Coming out? Do we know? Is there a documentary in the making? There's got to be.
Woj has already kind of done like a documentary podcast series about Giannis and that entire draft and everything. But I'm sure one day there will be a lengthy, you know, Giannis documentary or feature film, you know, like we saw with LeBron. Like that was back in the theaters, if I remember correctly. What was it? More Than a Game, I think was the name of that. Mm. But just awesome to see. And Eric, like you said, you know, small market team. It gives Orlando Magic fans some hope that maybe even in this draft, we get our guy, John Hammond. He might get, you know, lightning might strike twice, and he might draft another guy that ends up leading us to the championship. But guys, we brought Eric on the show to talk about the draft. You know, as far as I know, he's a draft expert. You know what I mean? We had him on the show last year. So we're going to get into the draft talk here. Eric, first thing that I wanted to ask you in terms of like your big board, your draft board, if you just quickly want to go through like your top 10.
Yeah, sure. I know we want to get to the Magic pick, so I won't spend too much time. No hot takes at number one. Got to be Cade Cunningham, no question. I've got Jalen Green from G League Ignite going two. I've got Evan Mobley at three. I've got my Toronto Raptors taking Jalen Suggs at four. Then at pick number five to the Orlando Magic, I have Moses Moody. Pick six, I've got Scotty Barnes. Pick seven, Jonathan Kuminga. Pick eight, Keon Johnson. Pick nine, Davion Mitchell. And at number 10, another name that has been thrown a lot or thrown around a lot on Magic Twitter, James Bouknight. So that's my 1 to 10. And of course, you can see who I have slotted to the Magic right now.
All right. So that's right where we were going to go, the fifth and eighth pick for the Orlando Magic. So if you can just kind of elaborate why you have Moody going five and then eight, Keon Johnson.
Sure. I think the thing for me and Moses Moody, and I just want to be kind of clear about this from the top, it's not just that I think that Moses Moody is the best pick for the Magic at five. I truly think he's the fifth best player in this draft. So this is not me expecting them to reach for a player that maybe fits around the core they normally have. I think he happens to really fit around what they already have in their organization. But I really do think he's the fifth best player. I'm just in love with his ability to shoot the ball. And the thing with it there is that with a lot of players that you look at like him who can shoot the ball, and then you look at at his wingspan, you don't actually see players like that a lot. So, I mean, he's 6'6", and then he measured with a 7-foot wingspan, which is, of course, super magic-y, at least the way they've drafted recently. However, like we've seen with the Magic, usually with guys with that wingspan, shooting the ball is an issue. So, and, I mean, you really see that. There's all kinds of studies that kind of equate having longer wingspans with players struggling to shoot the ball. I mean, you see it with Giannis. And then on the other end of the spectrum, one of the greatest shooters of all time, JJ Redick, he's got like a -3 wingspan. And you think about, you know, mechanics shooting the basketball. You want your elbow in. You want that ball to be as close to your body as possible when you go up. So, you know, imagine having a 7-foot wingspan versus a negative wingspan. It's a lot easier to shoot with proper technique with shorter arms. So for Moses Moody to shoot the basketball so well, but still have such a long wingspan, you just really don't see that many players like that in the NBA. It's a lot more rare than a lot of people think. And then getting into some of the advanced analytics, I know a lot of people think of him as a shooter first, but if you actually look at his statistical profile, he's really a pick and roll ball handler first, and he was one of the best in college basketball last year. Someone who's so dangerous getting to the hoop off pick and roll, always a threat to pull up off the dribble off the pick and roll, and also someone who can make pretty much every pass. And I think that's something that's underrated about his game. And being 6'6" with a 7-foot wingspan, he's able to make those lanes. He's able to make all the passes available. And that's something that you just wouldn't see from a guard who's not 6'6" without a 7-foot wingspan. So I'm really in love with Moses Moody. He's also someone who's killed the interview game. Every team seems to love his personality and his mindset. And yeah, I think he's the fifth best player in the draft who also happens to fit really well with the Magic.
And that's interesting, Eric, because Moody is someone that, you know, Jonathan and I have both been saying pretty much unequivocally he needs to be number 8, the 8th pick for the Magic. He needs to do it. That needs to be the guy. But at 5 is interesting. At 5 shakes up the draft. Like that is the first probably pick of the draft. If it goes the way your top 4 is, that'd be the first pick. The Magic would throw everybody for a loop. And, you know, maybe not throw us for a loop after, you know, hearing that from you that you have him 5, and, you know, maybe he's not a reach. Maybe he is the guy that the Magic could take, and maybe there's a reason we're so in love with him at 8, and that why not, if you're in love with him at 8, 3 picks sooner, pick him at 5. And whatever happens at 8, I mean, you still have good people to choose, players to choose from when it comes to that 8th pick. One thing that's interesting about him is that Moody shoot in college shot 38.7% off the dribble. And, you know, guys that are around that, people might hear that and be like, well, I don't really hear that used much, what they shoot off the dribble percentage-wise. But, for instance, Book Knight shoots 33.3% off the dribble. Davion Mitchell shoots 43.6% off the dribble, which is considered really good off the dribble. So Moody is somewhere in the middle there, not to mention the fact that defending, he's a good defender. He's got lateral quickness. His length can cover his mistakes. Opponents shot the ball 32% against him this past season. So I think there's a lot there to be said about Moses Moody, and there's a lot there that you know, have him at 5, and that is your official, you know, mock going into a week from the draft here.
Yeah, Eric, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, that's also, Luke, why I had to preface that I truly think he is the fifth best player in the draft, because I know that there's going to be people who hear that and say, oh, it's a bit of a reach, but you know, maybe that's who you think fits with the best of the Magic. So that, I just wanted to reiterate, I truly do think he's the fifth best player in the draft. And I think that looking at some of the other players in that range, if you value shot making off the dribble, like you said, movement shooting, the stuff that's gotten players paid recently, the toughest skill sets to acquire in the NBA, I put him there at 5, and I feel pretty confident about it. I don't feel like it's hot takey. I don't feel like I'm swimming against the, you know, trying to be different and shaking things up. It's really what I feel, and I look forward to revisiting it in a couple of years where we can really look at this draft. But yeah, sorry, go ahead, Jonathan.
No, you're sticking to your guns, and I really, really appreciate that. I do find the Moody pick at 5 interesting, and I wanted to ask you this. In terms of his upside, right? A lot of people are, you know, all hot about potentially taking Jonathan Kuminga at 5, largely because of his, you know, star potential and his upside. So what do you project Moody's upside to be? Because that might be a guy that, you know, people think like, okay, he is a really great player right now. How much better is he going to get?
Well, the player that I think his like high end kind of ceiling outcome would be, and I know this is a lofty name, but I would say Bradley Beal, a player who again was kind of known as a shooter coming out of college, but when he got to the NBA, turned out to be someone who's more of a pick and roll ball handler. Again, Bradley Beal is someone who's like 6'5" with a 6'8" wingspan. Bradley Beal is someone who's bigger than I think a lot of people realize, and Moses Moody's even bigger. I don't think he's got quite as quick of a first step as a Bradley Beal. But again, someone who can shoot the ball with size at the kind of shooting guard position and also be a pick and roll ball handler. And again, Moses Moody is a guy that a lot of people kind of see as a shooting guard. But when you look at his kind of profile and the way that he really plays, it's as a primary initiator, pick and roll ball handler. And of course, when John Wall went down, you know, last year, we started to see Bradley Beal in that pick and roll ball handling role. And that's still kind of they realized, even no matter what guard they put next to him, that Bradley Beal was going to be the best option as the primary initiator. So I see a lot of similarities to their game. So do I think he's, you know what, I lock in that I think he's going to be as good as Bradley Beal? No, I would not be that bold, but I think that's his high end outcome. And if he ends up being, you know, 75-80% of Bradley Beal, that's still a fantastic player.
And then Keon Johnson at 8. What's the reasoning behind that? Are you saying that might be kind of the next archetype the Magic might be after, and he might be the third best behind Kuminga and Barnes, and then he would kind of be the last guy left on the board? Or what's your thinking with Johnson at 8?
I think that obviously looking at the way that the Magic have valued defense, I think they're going to look and say, oh, this might very well be the best perimeter defender in the class. His ability to move laterally is just ridiculous. Like, he's one of the few guys, well, I shouldn't say few guys. I enjoy this about a lot of players, but he really makes watching him play defense fun. There's a lot of players that, you know, you find yourself wanting to watch them on the defensive end because you need to check a box when you're scouting them. But he makes it, you know, truly fun to watch him play defense. And the pride he takes on that side of the floor is just like contagious to his teammates. It's fun to watch as an observer. And I think, again, he goes to the NBA combine and has a 48-inch vertical. I think that's pretty ridiculous. And you kind of see that with his first step in the way he's able to get by players. And he doesn't have much of an offensive game right now other than straight line drives, but he's such a young player. And I think that coaches will see, well, look at that athleticism, look at that first step, and look at the fact that his jumper hasn't totally developed yet. It's like, well, we can add more to his offensive game. We can give him a jumper, but he's always going to be one of the best perimeter defenders in this class, and he's got all the physical kind of tools you want. This is actually a question I think I'm going to throw back to you guys because I'm very interested, but I think that they're probably not looking at taking huge swings in this draft, considering that they've already got what looks to be some stars in Jonathan Isaac, and I think they're super happy with the Cole Anthony pick. I think that was awesome. You know, when we went on the podcast last year, I would have never thought he was going to be available to you guys, and I think that that was awesome. I think that Markel Fultz is obviously shows a lot of star potential. So I kind of think that with the 8th pick, they're probably looking at trying to hit a single or a double and probably not trying to go strikeout or home run. But I actually want to throw that out to you guys, just kind of generally in this draft, particularly with two top 10 picks. Are you looking for the Magic to like try to hit a home run and get a superstar and maybe crash out? Or would you rather them take two safe players or take one swing and one safe player? I'm really interested what your feel is and how they should approach this.
Well, my feel is they should trade up to 2 and draft Jalen Green if possible. That's what I would prefer them to do over anything else. Outside of that, I think I want to see them kind of try to do both. I want them to try to hit a home run with one of the guys, and then whichever it is, 5 or 8 or vice versa, and the other guy needs to be more of the safe bet. So I think that's really why a lot of Magic fans, myself, Luke included, have been really high on Moses Moody, especially at 8, where, you know, he's in a lot of the other mock drafts that you see that he's closer to that range. Obviously, you believe that he's the, you know, might be the 5th best player in the draft. So Luke and, you know, myself, we could absolutely be wrong on that. But I think that's why we were so high on Moody, is because even if he doesn't reach that Bradley Beal ceiling, regardless, we all think he's going to be a really, really good NBA player. Luke, what about you?
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing with us, Jonathan, has been, you know, that theory, right? The Magic need to, you know, try to hit a home run with the 5th pick, and then, you know, on the flip side, be much safer with the 8th pick. I think in this role, you could, you know, go safe pick with Moody at five, because let's be honest, Jamal Mosley said that, you know, one of the things he wants to play with is space, right? Moses Moody fits that line of thinking. And Jamal Mosley is going to have a hand and have, you know, some say in who gets drafted on draft night, because it's his team, it's how he wants to play and how he wants to, you know, coach these guys. So I think if he puts something in their ear, the front office's ear, about, hey, let's go Moody at five, or I want Moody really bad, and they know that, then maybe they do go with him at five. And I honestly, I wouldn't really mind if Moody gets taken at five. He's a guy that I want, so why not take him at five instead of eight, and not risk that, you know, he gets picked at six or seven, and then all of a sudden you're with nothing essentially when it comes to that eighth pick, like comparatively to what we really wanted, because it seems like right now it's Moody or Book Knight, and Eric will get into that comparison for sure, and just comparing those guys. But yeah, I wouldn't be mad at Moody at five. Johnson at eight would be interesting. He's one of the guys that, you know, when we talked about it a few episodes ago, Jonathan, he's one of the guys that, you know, you write down great defender and then you come back and you cross it out and put incredible defender. And that's exactly what I did. He's one of those guys, and he does fit kind of what the Magic believe in. And one of those things being defense. So yeah, I think that I have no problem with that, with going, you know, two safer picks at five and eight. Because the other thing is, Jonathan, the other biggest thing we've talked about is how many players is too many players to develop. And if you're so focused on developing, you know, a certain group of guys, other guys get overlooked. They end up getting traded anyway because, you know, they haven't developed and you haven't been able to put toward the time and dedication. I mean, that's a lot of guys we're talking about the Magic need to develop. So if you pick two safe guys who can come in, contribute right away off the bench, eventually make their way into the starting lineup at some point, maybe, then yeah, why not do that?
All right. I'm pretty interested defensively here too. What the Markelle Fultz, Cole Anthony backcourt is going to be in the future. And that's another kind of reason where, like, someone like a Keon Johnson, someone who you could play, you know, beside either of those guys, maybe not starting, but coming off the bench, just to insulate those guys defensively. So maybe I value that role where at some point, if one of those guys, whether it's Anthony, whether it's Markelle Fultz, doesn't become a great defender or a capable defender, maybe you need a guy like Johnson in there to shore that up. So that's another kind of reason that I feel that fit my work.
All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break. All right, guys, the Olympics, Euros, baseball, major championships, and concerts are all in this summer. You know what isn't? A wild and hairy bush. Tame yourself below the belt with help from our friends at Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Their fourth-generation performance package includes the brand-new Lawnmower 4.0. If an athlete treats their body like royalty, why not treat yours like Olympic gold? Fellas, do right by your boys and join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com with the code 6th. That's S-I-X-T-H at manscaped.com.
The world is starting to open, and the Performance Package 4.0 from Manscaped is here to help you get ready. Inside, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, weed whacker, ear and nose hair trimmer, crop preserver ball deodorant, crop reviver toner, plus two free gifts, performance boxer briefs and the Shed travel bag. Talk about a world-class dismount into a post-quarantine world. This package is the perfect package for your package and peak performance in whatever sport you desire.
So guys, get 20% off and free shipping with the code 6th at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code 6th, S-I-X-T-H at manscaped.com. Achieve pubic glory this year with Manscaped. All right, guys, we are back with Eric Fawcett here of NBA Draft, covering the NBA draft for NBA Canada, Australia, India, and Japan. So, Eric, you mentioned that you know why you like Moody at five, why you like Keon Johnson at eight. What is it that you see or perhaps don't see in a Jonathan Kuminga or Scotty Barnes as to why, you know, you don't have the Magic taking one of those guys at five?
The thing about Jonathan Kuminga, and, you know, I get why he's enticing for sure. But again, I kind of look at his archetype of a player, and I think a lot of people are like, okay, raw, athletic, long wing, which is great. But I watch his game, and, you know, does he have really good athleticism? Yes. Does he have elite athleticism? I don't think so. Yeah, you look at his frame. Does he have good size? Yeah, he has good size and length. Does he have elite size and length? No, he doesn't. I don't think he's as long and bouncy as a lot of people kind of think he is. So it's like, if you're going to make a play, especially at the fifth overall pick, there's been players that have worked out in the past by saying, hey, who is the longest wing and the most athletic wing in the draft? Let's gamble on that guy. But if you put Jonathan Kuminga against them, he would be the least tall, the least long, the least athletic of all those guys. So to then see that, yeah, the jump shot's definitely a problem. The fact that he doesn't really shoot free throws well, which doesn't speak very well to him long-term. There's times for me where I would take swings on that archetype of a player, but Jonathan Kuminga just isn't that guy for me. So, you know, if the Magic take him at five, could you talk yourself into being enticed by him and excited about it? Yeah, absolutely you should be. But for me, it's pretty easy for him to slide down to where I have him. And I do think the Magic would be better off passing on him. But Scotty Barnes, on the other hand, I really do love Scotty Barnes. Someone who I think is just like, there's so often guys that come and they're, you know, 6'9" and can handle the ball, and people say, oh, it's a 6'9" point guard. And like, if you actually watch their film, it's like, okay, he gets a rebound and he dribbles down the court with his right hand in a straight line and gives up the ball to a guard. And it's like, wow, look at him handle the ball. But I mean, man, with Scotty Barnes, it's like legitimately putting the ball through his legs, putting the ball behind his back, his head's up the whole time. Anytime there's a cutter, he hits them. His assist to turnover ratio is fantastic. He controls pace so well and can speed up and slow down like a much smaller guard or like Luka Doncic. So I really am enticed by his ability to handle the ball, for his ability to initiate offense. And of course, defensively, someone who you can switch up and down the lineup, and he's going to excel guarding like three or four of those positions. My one concern is if the jump shot doesn't totally work out, is he something approximating Ben Simmons? It's like, yeah. And is that a great player? Yeah, I love Ben Simmons, and I'm higher on Ben Simmons than a lot of people. But, you know, what's Ben Simmons' trade value right now? Like, of course there's teams that want him, but, what kind of value are you getting on that from the fifth overall pick versus, like, again, let's go back to Moses Moody. If he just shoots 37% from the field, or from the 3-point line, I should say, and is, and guards his position well, every year you see teams paying ridiculous amounts of assets for 3-and-D wings. So I think just from an asset standpoint, and by maximizing the value of that pick, maybe Scotty Barnes just isn't the highest kind of value guy, though he could very well end up being a stud. So of the two kind of upside plays that I'm sure are the most commonly talked about with the Magic, not so high on Kuminga, definitely high on Scotty Barnes, and that would still be an excellent pick. And if somehow it was Scotty Barnes at five and you were able to get Moses Moody at eight, to be honest, to me, that would be that'd be a pretty awesome haul for the Magic. But for me, it's still just kind of the safer pick of Moody with maybe similar ceiling, but he's got a higher floor. But yeah, still definitely a Scotty Barnes fan. But for you guys, who do you like more out of the upside plays?
Luke?
Well, I wanted to ask you real quick here, Eric, before we get to that. You know, we put out there that we were having you on the show today, and, you know, told people just throw your questions at us. We'll pick some here and there. This actually goes, you're talking about Scotty Barnes there for a minute. It goes into what I was talking about. But Simon Chamberlain on Twitter said, "More I hear about Barnes, the more I like. What would he bring to the Magic's game that maybe we don't currently have on the roster? Is there anything that jumps out at you about what Barnes would bring to the table, Eric, that, you know, we don't currently see the Magic have?"
Well, as much as I really do love Cole Anthony and Markelle Fultz, I don't think that either of them are like elite playmakers, and I don't think they're maybe elite at finding shots for their teammates. And have the Magic really had a great distributor since the great Shelvin Mack? I mean, that's the question that we are still going to have. So we need another dime dropper of Shelvin Mack, you know, caliber. So, you know, dare I say, Scotty Barnes could be a better dime dropper than Shelvin Mack. So, but in all seriousness, again, while I love I love Cole Anthony and Markelle Fultz. I'm imagining, can you imagine with, if you've got Scotty Barnes with the basketball running point, and then you've got on either side of the floor pin down screens being set by Jonathan Isaac or and Chuma Okiki for Cole Anthony and Markelle Fultz, seeing those guys getting curling off screens, and Scotty Barnes, a great passer, getting those guys shots off movement or finding cutters. Jonathan Isaac sets a back screen for Cole Anthony. Everyone's concerned with a jump shot. Scotty Barnes finds him perfectly for an alley-oop. I think to be able to have a big passer like that, I think just makes so much sense. So I could definitely see the fit for Scotty Barnes, and there's definitely reason to be excited by him if the Magic were to take him.
Now, as you know, as we see year in, year out in the playoffs, you know, the further you go into the postseason, a lot of times the more and more the game slows down, you know, especially like in the half court. Do you have any concerns with Scotty Barnes' potential at the playmaking and really ball handling, and perhaps even as a primary scoring option in the half court?
Yeah, and I mean, that right there would be the question about his ceiling and about his value long term. And again, I made the Ben Simmons comparison, and I do think it's a fair one for his high end outcome. Which again, if you get a Ben Simmons with the, well, let's say fifth overall pick for the Magic, that's still a great pick. There's no question. But we see guys like that getting played out of the playoffs all the time. You need to be able to hit shots in the playoffs when the whistles tighten and they aren't going to give you that touch foul going to the hoop, which is why we've kind of seen some of these physical big driving players, they haven't been as successful in the playoffs when they're not getting to the line all the time, or when they miss key free throws. So, you know, Luke mentioned one of my favorite stats for looking at any player earlier in the draft. It's shooting off the dribble. And that's something that I think is so important to the NBA game, with the way that defenses are so tight. If you're going to get a shot off, you're not going to be able to just sit in the corner, get your feet set, catch and shoot. Those shots happen sometimes, but not as much, especially in the playoffs. You need guys that can take a couple of bounces, create shots, and hit them. And is Scotty Barnes that guy? Well, no, he's not. He's going to be able to get a shot off because he's tall, but he's not a great shooter, and I'm not sure how much you want him taking those shots. And again, that's what all kind of funnels back to my love of a player like Moses Moody, because thinking about these players, Scotty Barnes could really be an awesome, awesome NBA player, but you could still be wondering in a couple of years in the playoffs, man, are we going to be able to keep him on the floor in the final 5 minutes of the fourth quarter of a playoff game with a player like Moses Moody? I don't think you're wondering about that whatsoever. So again, that's something that is important, Jonathan, and I think it's smart that you brought that up.
Yeah, and Eric, we're going to kind of move into strictly our fan questions that we've got here for you. Before we get into the debate of Moody versus Booknight, because I will say, I'm putting like who asked what question after everything. For Moody versus Booknight, I just put everybody. That's right. It seems to be a lot of the questions we got. But before we dive into that and things about those guys individually, specifically Booknight, since we've talked a lot about Moody, Daniel Mortensen, the third from Twitter, said, thoughts on Şengün. This is a guy that Jonathan is, he loves Şengün. He loves him, but he also has been on record saying, I don't know if I've got the cojones to pick him at 8 over the guys that'll be available, but I'd be in the back of the room rubbing my hands together if Şengün got picked. And that's what Jonathan has said on record. So on Eric, record. What are your thoughts on him? And are you about to, you know, move Jonathan away from that a little bit, or are you going to just kind of fuel the fire for him?
Oh, I'm fueling the fire. I'm a big Şengün fan. I'm a big fan of guys who are able to do really well in some of the best leagues in the world. Like, I mean, the Turkish League is fantastic. One of the best leagues in the world, full of ex-NBA players and guys who could currently play in the NBA. And he was a 17-10 guy, which does not, again, if you look back in the history of that league, that doesn't happen. We saw with like Luka Doncic, when he dominated the second best league in the world, that it's like, oh yeah, like we don't need to see him do it against, you know, Missouri State in the, you know, the Valley Conference in college basketball to know he's a good pick. It's like, no, like see these guys kind of perform against professionals. That's huge. So the other thing with Şengün, I think that so many people hear his style of play and they think, oh, he's, you know, he's a dinosaur because he's mostly getting it done in the paint on the block with his back to the basket. I think that when people hear that, they maybe have an image of Şengün in his head that is like totally inaccurate. Like if you actually look at his body, you look at the way he moves, he's a, athletic looking dude. He moves really well, and like he scores on the block because it's how he wins basketball games. Like you saw him face up at times and you saw him shoot jump shots, and he was pretty effective at it. He was just trying to win basketball games, and the way he realized he could do that was with his footwork and strength and touch on the inside. So I think when he goes to the NBA game, he's going to go away from that less, and he's not going to need to rely on that because he's really talented in a lot of other ways. I think he can shoot the basketball. Watching his free throw stroke, I think he's going to be able to stretch it to three soon. So I mean I'm going to gamble on a player that was really productive in a great league, and I think is a lot more athletic than people think. So would I be would I draft him at eight? I can't quite get there, but man, if the Magic want to be really bold on draft night, I would applaud. That'd be a lot of fun.
As everyone's screaming and just thinking, you know, the world is burning when the Magic take Şengün at eight, I'll just be sitting there in the back to myself, not saying a word. I'll be excited. I will be excited. I see a lot of potential. Like you said, he dominated in one of the best leagues in the world outside of the NBA. And again, like the shooting stroke, Luke and I talked about this on our draft prospect breakdown a few weeks ago. The shooting stroke does not look bad. Like when you look at a guy like Scottie Barnes or even like a Jonathan Kuminga, you're like, that needs work. Like what I'm just seeing with my eyes, regardless of the result, whether or not it goes through the net, you look at Şengün and you're like, that just is pleasing to the eye. So I'm very happy to hear you say that. So Luke, I think we got some more questions here.
Yeah, we got some more here. So now we're going to dive into Book Night Moody debate, but also kind of just want to talk a little bit more individually about Book Night first. Theo Giannini, I hope I pronounced that right, one of our listeners from the UK messaged us and said, do you think Book Night has star score potential or not?
Yeah, potential, absolutely, and I can see why people are enticed by it. He is a really kind of like slippery, crafty guy off the dribble, like lot of head fakes, lot of hesitations. That stuff is pretty pleasing to the eye. One might say he's not just a basketball player; he's a hooper. He's got a little bit of that that shake to him, and so the potential is certainly there. But again, with the whole thing with Book Night right now is it's always been with him a lot more. He's always been a lot more prospect than player. Like you see those flashes of like brilliance with his, you know, scoring potential and his offensive electricity and flash. But at the same time, just someone who like, you just like, a lot of the shots aren't falling. A lot of the floaters spill out. A lot of the really nice crossovers are right after it. He dribbles the ball off his foot. So potential there. Yeah, absolutely. But will it come together? That's still to be determined.
And do you think, Eric, his player comparison, what do you think it would be for the floor and ceiling of Book Night? That comes from Tyler Finello asking this question. Because then somebody else, Holiday 31675, said, is Book Night a star in the making or is he Jordan Clarkson 2.0? So kind of where do you find, you know, Book Night being on your floor and ceiling in terms of NBA player comparisons?
I mean, I feel like Jordan Clarkson was just used as a bit of a slight right there. Let's remember he just obviously, you know, won Sixth Man of the Year. But I mean, that is a pretty good player comparison. I think at the floor, like, man, I mean, the floor would be like Dion Waiters, a guy who doesn't shoot the ball that well, but is still going to be in there, you know, trying to get his. And again, there was times where that really worked for like Dion Waiters. And then obviously, ultimately, the lack of defense and the lack of shooting was what did him in. And that is the situation with Book Night right now. He's got good athleticism and good length, but he's not a good defender, not a, you know, train wreck of a defender, but not a great one, and he doesn't shoot the ball that well, so he's so reliant on those shimmy, shake, hesitation, drives to the hoop, which are going to work sometimes, but you know, not all the time. So I kind of see, again, like an Anfernee Simons from Portland, and again, a guy who's exploded for some big scoring games and has also been kind of unplayable in some playoff games. So that's kind of what, again, that's kind of my I feel for Book Knight. And again, here's the thing with Book Knight, his whole story as a basketball player. He like wasn't super highly recruited out of high school. And then he played in one big AAU tournament and played awesome. He was really, really good. And then right after that, he got injured. So there was a lot of these high major teams that were like, oh man, this guy out of nowhere, kind of hidden gem. He looked awesome. Let's offer him. And then obviously, yeah, goes to UConn, a really good program. Then he gets injured to start the season. Then it's like, oh, well, you know, he played, there's this big time recruit, he's injured, but he, you know, when he comes, he's going to be really good. And then he joins the season midway, plays really well. Then he gets injured again next season. And then he comes back and he plays pretty well. So there's a lot of like, again, there's always been these flashes, but he's never really had to put it together kind of. He's never been able to put it all together. And it's always been, of course, I don't want to blame him for having injuries, but there's just so much of people who kind of like saw him once here or there. And it's just like, oh man, that, you know, he's pretty nice as an offensive player, but he's never really put it together. And again, a lot of the advanced analytics are not kind to him. He's, like I said, where Moses Moody looks really good with things as a driver off the ball, as a cutter off the ball, especially as a pick and roll ball handler. With James Booknight, he is well below average college pick and roll ball handler. You don't like to see that from a guard. He doesn't shoot well off of movement. We know that. He did have good moments as a cutter, and that's what really got him a lot of points at the college level. But you know, how many guys in the NBA are making livings off scoring off cuts? Not too many of them, especially guards. Maybe if you're Clint Capella, you're scoring a whole lot of cuts, but probably not James Booknight. So again, there's a lot to be kind of excited about when you watch James Booknight kind of like showcase his shiftiness and his hesitation moves and all that. But on the whole, I mean, again, talking about it with compared to Moses Moody, I mean, one's a better shooter, one's bigger, one's more consistent, one's a better pick and roll ball handler, one's better without the ball in his hands. I mean, you can call it a debate, but I'm pretty comfortable on Team Moody here.
Eric, are we sure that Detroit does not want to take Moses Moody number one overall? Are we sure?
you've got to make that call, you know? Maybe they're ready to move. You know, Magic can draft him and then make moves, yeah.
Yeah, we don't have many questions left here, Eric. I think that kind of settles the Moody versus Book Knight debate. I do want to throw this in just because who we refer to often on the show as best friend Drew Gooden, submitted a question for you. And he actually had a good thought. I mean, I think that the thought is correct in terms of like there, and it does show me like there's a ton of options between 5 and 8 of ways that like this doesn't go wrong for Orlando. And Drew is someone who inevitably is drinking the Kool-Aid of James Booknight and what everybody is saying about him and the hype around him. He says, thoughts on Booknight at 5. I don't think he is there at 8. And if we take him at 5, either Moody, Barnes, or Kuminga will still be on the board. And you just take whoever's left at that point. What do you think about that, Eric?
I mean, in fairness, if Booknight if he's taken that early, then like, yeah, you're shaking up the draft and you're probably getting a Kuminga or a Moody at 8. So, I mean, the logic is definitely there. I mean, it's just kind of funny to me just in the sense that, you know, I'd rather have Moody, and I think you could get Moody at 5 and Booknight at 8. Of course, he's suggesting you go the other way around to get both.
The logic kind of works both ways.
Yeah. So the logic does it. So it is fundamentally sound. And hey, I am someone who, if you're the Magic and you love Booknight, I do think you should probably take him at 5. Like, I know it's some GMs are terrified of going off the board and getting roasted for it and maybe losing their job down the line. But I think people are starting to see more and more now that, these mock drafts that everyone puts before the season, there's no more consensus like there used to be. You know, 5 or 6 years ago, everyone's mock drafts looked pretty much the same, and then on draft night, it shook out just that way. We're seeing that teams are now starting to think on their own, and I think you're seeing less mistakes because of it. So yeah, if you're the Magic and you like Booknight, you probably should take him at 5 if you really love him. Do I have him still there at 8? You know, I personally do, but that's obviously not gospel. So yeah, go ahead, Magic. Like, find the best player that you really want. Take him at 5, and you know, you'll still probably get an awesome option at 8.
Yeah, and kind of I'll kind of group this question together, even though they're about different players. I'll pretty much just ask you. Someone said, you know, is 8th pick too big of a swing for Zaire Williams? So I guess I'll ask you, and all we'll need to know by this answer is, where do you have Zaire Williams at in your draft?
I have Ziaire Williams 21st. Not a big Ziaire Williams guy. I would say that, you know, high end outcome is he's like Jaden McDaniels from last year's draft, you know, and Jaden McDaniels actually ended up working out pretty good. But Ziaire Williams is kind of like James Bouknight, except to a more extreme example, where Ziaire Williams has always been kind of big prospect, not so much a player. He's always been more prospect than player, has never really been able to be effective on the court. But at the same time, Williams is a guy who's 6'9" and has flashes of great shot making. And I mean, that's the apex predator in today's NBA is guys who are 6'9" and can make shots. So, that would be pretty, pretty bold at eight. I think if you really love Ziaire Williams, I would hope the Magic could have a trade down scenario and get an asset and still get the guy they would want instead of taking him at eight. So, for me, Ziaire Williams, I've got him 21st and I even wonder if I have him a little bit too high there.
So it's safe to say that he does not have him at eight to the Magic. So, Eric, I wanted to ask you one last thing before we let you go here. Who are your quote-unquote sleepers in this year's draft that people may not be thinking about?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I know we talked to Şengün, who's, you know, we all love, and, well, you love at least. Luke was a little bit, you know, not so sure. But a player that I really love, I've got him going 18th. Most people have him going a little bit later than that, is LSU's Cam Thomas. He was probably the best pure scorer in the draft. Someone who, again, doesn't shoot the ball super well, and I think that's why people don't love him. But, you know, he was a 20-plus point-per-game scorer in the SEC. Awesome conference, and going against some great athletic defenders, and Cam Thomas was just getting bucket after bucket after bucket. And again, I look at a player like James Bouknight, who some people are saying, oh, like, you know, pure bucket getter, but doesn't shoot the ball pretty well, and we might want to draft him at five. I'm kind of looking at Cam Thomas, and I do think that James Bouknight is definitely a better prospect than Cam Thomas, but, you know, Cam Thomas might end up being like right there, and he's a guy that a lot of people have mocked in the 20s. So Cam Thomas is definitely a guy to watch for on draft night, but kind of more realistically, let's look in a couple of years and see where Cam Thomas is. I'm going to bet that he is outperformed wherever he gets drafted. And then another guy that I absolutely love, I've got him going much higher than a lot of other people, is Chris Duarte from Oregon. Some people might know his name as definitely the oldest player in the draft. He's 24 years old, so I know a lot of teams are really going to be scared off by that. But again, looking at some of the advanced numbers I love, like shooting off the dribble, like shooting off of screens and shooting off movement, he performs really, really well in those numbers. And again, 40% three-point shooter, 6'5", really tough defender, can score off the bounce. Chris Duarte is definitely a name that I love. And again, most people have him mocked in the 20s. I've got him going 12th, and I think he's going to be, well, it's less of a hot take because a lot of people had him in the 20s, and, you know, he just got invited to the green room. So I think that suggests that maybe I'm going to be a little bit more right than some other people who have him in the 20s, but we'll see on draft night.
And who do you have? Luke and I spent most of, if not all of our attention towards the top of the lottery. Who do you have going to the Magic at 33?
This is a pick I would just love so much for the Magic. Will he be there? I'm not totally sure. I mean, obviously I have him there, but that's Iowa's Joe Wieskamp. He's a player that, again, people might have heard recently because he was just like an NBA combine all-star. He measured at 6'7¼". And he measured with like a 42-inch vertical, and he was like an absolutely ridiculous shooter in college. He hit 46% of his threes last season on over 5 attempts per game. So like good volume, and he hit 46% of his threes. And yes, when you can get a 6'7" shooter, 42-inch vert, and 46% three-point shooter, I mean, if you can get that guy at 33, that's who I've got mocked to them, and I think that would be awesome. Because again, at pick 33, that's still in the range where like you're really just hoping you have a guy that's an NBA player who's going to stick around for a while. Absolute specialist in Wieskamp, and I would love if he was there for you guys.
Well, we're excited about the draft. We've got now, what is it, about 8 days to the draft, so we're really excited about that. If you guys don't already know, we are going to have our NBA draft lottery party, or draft party, I should say, that night, the 29th. We'll be at Harry Buffalo right across the street from the Amway Center at 5 o'clock, 6:45. We'll head over to the Amway. So I don't think Eric will be in town for that, but if you are, please feel free to come out. But Eric, always appreciate this, man, your expertise, your insight. Very, very impressive. Very, very much appreciated. This was a lot of fun, man. Thank you so much. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you on social media?
Well, first of all, if I'm in Orlando, you know you'll be getting the Disney invite from me.
I appreciate that. At least someone will, Eric. That means a lot. Eric, any interest in co-hosting an Orlando Magic podcast while we have you here?
Not for now. We'll let Luca hold this on for now, and you know, if you need a seventh man podcast, maybe in the future. But no, thank you. You can find me at eFawcett7 on Twitter. My mock draft will be up at the time that everyone's listening to this. I've got the full two rounds, and I've got words on every single player, not just the lottery, not just the first round. There'll be words on every player if you're looking to get to know a bunch of the names before the draft. But thanks again, guys, for doing this the second year in a row. I can only hope that we do it for a third next year.
Well, you and I will be here. Luke, we'll kind of figure out if Luke's going to be here or not next year. We'll see if I get the Disney invite next year. But again, Eric, thank you so much. And again, you guys know where you can find Erico. Please check out all of his stuff. Again, from what you've heard from this podcast, you can tell his insight expertise is incredible. But for Luke and Eric, this has been Jonathan. You guys are listening to the Six Man Show, and we will catch you guys next time. See ya. Thanks for listening to the Six Man Show. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher to get new episodes downloaded directly to your phone. Please take a minute to give us a 5-star rating and a review. It would really help us out a lot. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram @SixManShow and like us on Facebook. We'll catch you guys next time. Go Magic!